familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
Learning about breastfeeding is a component that is often overlooked by pregnant moms as they prepare for their new babies. We often have no idea what breastfeeding actually looks like. Today, Ina Mae Gaskin, also known as the Mother of Midwives, shares how mothers can prepare for an enjoyable breastfeeding experience. This is The Boob Group, Episode 10.
Breast milk, it does a baby good.
Silly daddy, boobs are for babies.
I make milk. What's your superpower?
If my breastfeeding offends you, put a blanket over your head.
Dairy diva.
Don't be lactose intolerant.
Nursing nature's own breast enhancement.
Meals on heels.
Whoever said there's no use crying over spilled milk never had to pump.
Breast milk. All udders are inferior.
Whatever your point of view, we're here to support your breastfeeding goals. We're The Boob Group, because mothers know breast. Welcome to The Boob Group. Broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I'm your host, Robin Kaplan. I'm also a certified lactation consultant and owner of the San Diego Breastfeeding Center. At The Boob Group, we're your online support group for all things related to breastfeeding. Visit our website at theboobgroup.com for more information on how you can become a part of our show. You can join our conversation by following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Google+. You can also send us comments or suggestions through our website or call the Boob Group hotline at 619-866-4775. Today, I'm joined by three fantastic panelists in the studio. Ladies, will you please introduce yourselves?
Hi, my name's Keegan Sheridan. I'm 35. I'm a licensed naturopathic doctor. I'm also a natural food and health expert for a major cereal company. I have two children. Miles is 23 months and Ames is almost 6 months.
Hi, I'm Valeria Curia Velasquez. I am a former fashion stylist, now a stay-at-home mom. I am 26 and have two children. Olivia is 2.5 and Mila is almost 11 months.
I'm Christina Williams. I'm 33 years old. I'm in medical education and I have one daughter, Paige. She is just about 5 months.
Thanks for joining us on the show, ladies.
Sounds familiar? If your baby is going through another bout of bad diaper rash, then you need to give Dr. Mom Butt Balm a try. It was created by a mom who's also a doctor. When my kids were little, I remember using this thick, goopy cream to help soothe their sensitive skin. Ugh, it was so difficult to wipe off. Not with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. You only need a small amount, and it's really easy to apply and remove. It's also free of dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, so it's gentle on your baby's delicate skin. Help your baby feel better and get relief from irritating diaper rash with Dr. Mom Butt Balm. Look for it on Amazon and Walmart.com.
Before we get started with today's topic, here's a question you all had for one of our experts.
Hi, Boob Group. My name is Danielle, and I'm from Manhattan. I'm currently pregnant with twins, and I'm due in a few months, and I'm having a tough time finding local and online resources for breastfeeding twins. Do you think that attending a regular prenatal breastfeeding class will prepare me adequately for breastfeeding my twins? Also, can you recommend ways that I can connect with other moms with twins in my community? Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Hi there. It's Donna. Great question, Danielle. I absolutely think that a regular prenatal breastfeeding class can be helpful for mom of twins, especially if these are your first babies. There are many factors that can make breastfeeding twins more complicated or different, but having an understanding of the basic mechanics can only help. It's a great idea to supplement a class like this with some twin-specific resources. I recommend Karen Gramada's book, Mothering Multiples, as well as her website, KarenGramada.com, for pregnancy, breastfeeding, and parenting resources for parents of multiples. You might also find it useful to schedule a prenatal breastfeeding consultation with a local IBCLC who can address any specific questions you have and help you get prepared before the babies arrive, and then keep her info on hand for support after the babies arrive. It's also great to connect with other moms of multiples. You can join your local Parents of Multiples organization for online or in-person support and resources. Know that some twins clubs are more breastfeeding educated than others, so if you don't get the support you need there, don't hesitate to look elsewhere. In some areas, the local La Leche League or other mother-to-mother support groups have experience supporting moms with multiples and can be a great option for meeting other moms. There are also support groups offered at hospitals and in private breastfeeding centers. You can contact them to see if they have a group specific for moms of multiples or if they have links to resources in your area. There are also online forums for breastfeeding twins support on several of the online parenting communities, which can be another great way of connecting with and learning from other moms. And then you can do that from the comfort of your pajamas or at 4 in the morning. And, of course, you can check out my website, breastfeedingtwins.org, for links to these resources and more information and support. Good luck.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Calendar. Let's be real. Running a household can be exhausting and chaotic. And finding the perfect Mother's Day gift, it's not exactly a no-brainer. Until now. The Skylight Calendar is the best way to organize the family and give everyone, especially mom, some peace of mind to enjoy the things that matter most. The Skylight Calendar is a smart, touchscreen calendar that keeps track of and manages the chores, dinner planning, groceries, and to-dos for the whole family. The Skylight Calendar automatically syncs each family member's digital calendars and displays them all together on one color-coded touchscreen. It even doubles as a digital picture frame so you can finally share all those special moments that are just sitting on your phone. As a limited-time offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight calendar when you go to skylightcal.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTCAL.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightcal.com/easy.
We have a very special interview today on The Boob Group. I recently interviewed Ina Mae Gaskin, a well-known and well-respected midwife who's written several books, including Ina Mae's Guide to Childbirth, Ina Mae's Guide to Breastfeeding, and Birth Matters, a Midwife's Manifesta. Ina Mae was the keynote speaker at the Your Natural Baby Fair here in San Diego. Sunny Galt, the host and producer of our sister show, Preggy Pals, emceed the event and introduced the speakers, including Ina Mae, which was a pleasure in itself. After the event, I was able to sit down with her and talk one-on-one about how to get breastfeeding off to a great start, and here's what she had to say. Hi, this is Robin Kaplan from The Boob Group, and I'm here interviewing Ina Mae about her perspective on breastfeeding. So Ina Mae, I have a couple questions for you. The first one is, what can a mother do during pregnancy to prepare herself best for breastfeeding?
Be around women who breastfeed. Just hang around them, observe them, hold their babies when they need to get up and go to the bathroom, whatever. Get familiar with babies and find out what interesting, fascinating little creatures they are.
Absolutely. It's during my breastfeeding classes. I teach prenatal breastfeeding classes, and that's one of the things that I've gained from my moms and my support group is they said they wish they would have gone to support groups, a breastfeeding support group, while they were pregnant.
That's the
so that way
do.
They could see mothers, they call it in their natural habitat. So
it's
seeing
exactly
what it looks like, how they breastfeed, because most of the women that we see in public are covered. You know, it's not necessarily acceptable to breastfeed out in the open in the United States. And so they said the breastfeeding support group is one of the first places that they actually saw what it looked like to see a woman breastfeed.
Right. I think it's really important to do that. And I urge us. I was in an airport in Texas that had a play place for kids at the airport. Finally, a place for the kids to romp around and play and where they can, you know, throw their little bodies around and have fun while waiting for the airplane. Now, the next thing is, where's the breastfeeding place?
Yep.
Where the women can collect together to do that, and where somebody else who's pregnant might be able to waltz in there. Let's have them in shopping malls. Let's have them near parks. Let's make the restaurants understand oh, yes, some people don't want to be around breastfeeding moms, but, you know, let's have the parents' place, you know, where the kids
Absolutely.
Are. So let's create these areas of sanctuary for breastfeeding moms, and those that don't want to see them can go to the other places. Absolutely. Because it's a human need to see this physiological activity, and it we cannot confine breastfeeding moms to their homes.
Absolutely. Oh, I love that idea. Thank you for mentioning that. What can a mother do during labor and birth to ensure getting breastfeeding off to a great start?
Well, the best thing is to not have medication, if possible, and to rely on the hormones that the body secretes and in the optimal settings for birth. Then nature kind of does the rest in most cases, and sometimes we need a little help with somebody who's knowledgeable. I think the best thing is that the baby stays with the mother, baby doesn't leave the mother, and there's no need for quick cord cutting and clamping, so we let that go till the pulsation stops at least. And then keep the baby with the mother. We don't have to do all this weighing and measuring and stuff like that. The baby's not going to lose any significant amount of weight, and it certainly isn't going to grow taller in the day. So the needs of the institution are less important than the needs of that individual mother-baby pair. Then what we like to do is when the baby starts to exhibit the signs that it's ready for breastfeeding, and this shouldn't be hurried up, you know. The baby's out looking around. His attention is not in the mouth. This is not the time to cram the breast in the mouth and expect anything to happen. But when we do see those signs, then without, you know, putting our hands on the mom, we kind of gently guide her to what would help. A lot of babies will just latch while mom is in a lying down position, but it depends on, you know, the shape and of her breasts and size and you know, what her nipples are like, you know. If she needs to sit up a bit, then we help her with that, and we suggest, you know, we watch and suggest to her what's going to make that first latch to get the baby's first efforts to result in a good latch. If you succeed in doing that, that baby learns.
Absolutely.
And so sometimes you'll have a baby that doesn't open the mouth very much, and so then and how do we get the baby's mouth to open more? And I ask mom to open her mouth and let the baby imitate, because they do mimic. And they do know what's going on.
Yeah.
So give the baby some credit for smarts and give them the help they need. And sometimes the baby almost gets it and just needs that lower lip pulled down so that it keeps the mom from developing sore nipples. And then I'm saying to the mom, it's not supposed to hurt. So if it's curling your toes and you're just going to grin and bear it, that's going to hurt you. And it's really, I think during pregnancy, it's really wise if they can learn manual expression so that they can learn the skill of expressing a few drops of colostrum. I think it's very important for them to know going in that colostrum comes in very small amounts, and that's physiological. This baby is not meant to eat on days one and two any significant amount. A few drops are very potent medicine and you know, enough for the baby. Then it's also good for her to know how to disconnect without the baby gumming her nipples. So she needs to know how to depress that portion of her breast and break the suction so that she can seize her nipple out, and then the baby will be surprised. And then we try to coax the baby to open the mouth again, and again help get that good latch. And it helps to bring baby's dad over to have a look, and so that if she's got large fluffy breasts, that he can know what that lower lip is doing. We need to teach the family how to help, you know, by bringing her water, bringing her the things she needs, because she's going to be sitting there
absolutely
a lot of the time, and to know that this is the way that it is to be. That's why I like that first 10 days, her in her nest. Let Facebook do the showing of the baby to everybody else. And when she feels these motherly protective instincts about not wanting everybody to hold the baby, obey that.
Yeah.
Everybody can wait.
I like to tell moms that I think the reason nature's intended us to sit down for over 30 to 40 minutes at each feeding session is because it's the only way that women will actually stay seated and actually relax and allow other people to come in and help take care of her and her baby, because that's the way it was supposed to be. We weren't supposed to be the hostess of everyone in the town to come and see our baby those first couple days. And I think that's what really gets women off to a difficult they are faced with the difficult challenge of allowing their healing process to take place because they're doing too much. And so I tell them, there's a reason that we're supposed to sit down and nurse our children for these extended periods of time in the beginning. It's because it's nature's way of telling you, sit down and stop doing so much.
That's right.
And bond with your baby and learn the nuances of your baby.
That's true. And I would say that's a really good time already in late pregnancy. I mean, you ought to be backing off the caffeine. We consume huge amounts of caffeine. Never so much, you know, has any people that I'm aware of consumed.
Okay.
And so we have to think about that and go, is that really good for us to do so much, to overdo? I mean, have these huge, you know, I mean, a cup size is so much. It has such a big effect on the body. And it runs the life force too hard, I think. So I think that a new mom really probably could do without that, and tapering off, you know, during pregnancy, and then, you know, get back to what zero is, because when you listen to the body's signals, that's what you have to do if you want to maintain good health. And surely that's part of the job of being a mother, is not only to do that for the baby, but to maintain our own, because that's also for the baby. It's for all the kids.
Absolutely. I have one last question for you. What are some of the important things to remember in the first days of breastfeeding would you recommend for a mom?
The baby's poop will change color dramatically. So it's going to be black and tarry at first, and then it gets, you know, moves into the browns and maybe a little green phase going on, and then when it gets to yellow, now you're getting to where the baby's really getting a lot of food. Your baby's not going to starve, right, easily, because the baby comes equipped with a lot of glycogen stored in the vital organs that makes the baby not actually ready to eat at first. And a lot of what they're doing the first 2 days, they're clearing out the meconium, which is not the baby, all right? That was sort of the packing material that keeps the intestines from sticking together, right? And so the colostrum is kind of a laxative that helps get that out. And especially babies whose mothers have had epidurals and have been loaded up with IV fluids, a lot of that extra fluid is going to be coming out of the baby, and that, again, is not the baby. So please don't freak out when somebody tells you the baby has lost so many ounces while in the hospital. This is nothing to freak out about. But what you want to do is to have the baby in as close to your body as possible. Skin-to-skin contact is ideal for as much of the day as possible. Just holding the baby, being with the baby, and, you know, put your... you know, don't be texting, you know, those play things don't belong in your hands while the baby should be there.
Yeah.
So maximize your communication with the baby until you really get your nervous systems in the kind of contact they should be. And then you'll have a better entry into breastfeeding, and it can be a true joy as well as a time saver and a built-in relaxation and meditation for you that can slow down the pace. Modern life keeps going faster, faster, faster. And if the woman doesn't slow it down, I don't see how anybody else in the family would have the power to do that.
Absolutely.
So that's the, you know, you're kind of the flywheel of the family, I'd say. And so we have to not keep up with that pace. And it's not a matter of going out and showing everybody what you did. Let somebody put a photo up on Facebook and let that do the talking.
That's terrific advice. Thank you. It was such a pleasure to meet you.
Good to meet you.
That concludes our interview with Ina Mae Gaskin. We now know more about Ina Mae's suggestions for breastfeeding mothers, as well as how mothers can be proactive in creating a positive breastfeeding experience for themselves and their babies. When we return, we will hear from our panelists about what they did to get breastfeeding off to a great start. So welcome back. Ladies, after listening to Ina May's advice about how to get breastfeeding off to a great start, what tips really resonated with you?
I just want to say I love Ina May, and I was so excited to listen to this interview. It was kind of cool just to hear her voice, because I've read two of her three books. I think the thing that resonated with me the most about Ina May was how she kept coming back to this, just needing to tune in and tune out to a lot of the stuff that's going around, both from a pacing perspective in our lives, not texting. I'm totally guilty of texting while nursing. That kind of resonated for me. But she's such a powerful woman, and I think her power comes in her simplicity. And that's the message that she has to share with all of us, is that we know how to do it. We were made to do it. And if you just trust yourself, that's when you can be successful. So it was a total treat to listen to that.
I agree. And it definitely resonated with me, especially because I failed at exclusively breastfeeding my first. And with my second, I was forced to be on the couch because I had a very hard C-section recovery. And I actually feel that it was a blessing because I literally lived on the couch for a week and the baby lived on my breast. And I feel that is what helped us succeed the second time around. It was just me and her, and we made it happen, and we made it happen by doing nothing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I really appreciated her thoughts on keeping everyone away for a little bit, taking that time for yourself and the baby. I didn't do that very well, and in retrospect, I should have really put my foot down and kept that time to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that definitely resonated with me as well, because the first time around with my oldest son was the first grandchild out of the entire family, and so everyone wanted to see him, and I played hostess for those first couple weeks, and we got off to a really rough start, not just with parenting, but bonding and parenting. And so the second time around, we made some pretty significant changes in how we allowed people to come over and meet the baby. And it was more, I felt respectful of our family and our bonding time and just getting to know each other. And I felt like it went so much more smoothly. And I still had breastfeeding challenges with my second one. It wasn't that was all fixed, but I felt like I got to know him so much better because I listened to my intuition, which is, I think, what Ina May really, really recommends. And I agree with you, Keegan, the simplicity of it. When I was interviewing her, I was just like, you're so dead on. Like, she gets it. And that's why she is this powerful woman who is really creating change, you know, for all of us new moms.
Yeah, she rocks.
Yeah, she totally does. So ladies, how, you know, Ina May talks about she recommends preparing for breastfeeding, you know, being around babies and being around pregnant moms and moms who are breastfeeding and things like that. How did you prepare for breastfeeding while you were pregnant?
Well, I mean, going back again to Ina May and the simplicity of it, I realized the second time around that I didn't need anything really. All I needed was just the education of, you know, you don't need a pacifier, you don't need a bottle, you definitely do not need formula. So it really helped me to just read about proper latching techniques, and just go into it with this idea of all I need is the baby in me and just the will to do it. And I feel that is what I needed to prepare, is just, we're going to make it. We don't need the bells and whistles, and we did.
Just trusting in yourself and...
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Terrific.
Yeah, I read books. Ina May's book was a big one for me, but I read some others as well. Took a class, and I even took a refresher class with you, Robin, mm-hmm. before I had my second baby, too. Just to make sure all of the little details that may have faded in the haze of those first few weeks were fresh for me. But I think one thing that I was able to do with both babies, but certainly with the second baby, having had experience of doing it before, was just to have a lot of patience and not feeling rushed to make anything happen at all. Ina May talks about this, and you certainly would see this in any book that you read, that the baby really doesn't need any calories at the beginning. And I think that, at least for me, was very it gave me permission to not try and force things, because all you want is to make sure your baby is okay. And if you know that your baby was kind of built to be self-sufficient for a while, then you can just let them do whatever they're going to do. And so it was almost fun the second time around to kind of see him rooting on my chest, looking for my breasts, and allowing that process to take 20, 30 minutes for him to get there. It wasn't a big deal, and kind of letting him kind of figure it out. And his latch wasn't great at first, but it also wasn't hurting me. So I just went with it. And he did, as he was doing it more and more, he got better and better. And pretty soon he had a great latch and it was done. So
I think that's especially important in a hospital setting, or it was for me, because unlike my birth center and home birthing friends, I had nurses down my throat all day, weighing her and trying to see, how she was nursing and things like that. And the second time around, I went into it knowing, okay, she's not going to get a bottle's worth of milk. She doesn't need a bottle's worth of milk. So I don't need a supplement. I don't need to worry about her gaining. I know she's going to lose. I think knowing what to expect makes a world of difference, because you don't pressure yourself or the baby into doing things that you don't even need to do.
Yeah, you do have a couple days where to kind of play around with, like Ina May said, that it was just the calories is not as important as getting rid of that meconium, which is why there's colostrum, and to coat their gut. And so rather than, you're absolutely correct, it's that they don't need a full bottle. And so knowing that, and just knowing they're getting this very minimal amount, but the quality of it is so intense that it kind of just allows you to kind of sit back and say, okay, do what you need to do. What were you going to say?
I did a lot of reading. I read a ton of books, internet. I went to your breastfeeding course, Robin. I thought I had it made. I thought I knew exactly what to expect and what was going to happen. And while I knew what was supposed to happen and it wasn't falling into place the way I expected, it was very frustrating for me. I didn't receive the kind of lactation support in the hospital that I should have. And my daughter had a tongue tie that was not diagnosed until about a week after she was born. And so I was having a lot of struggles because of that. And once that was repaired, things got a lot better. And if I would have known that in the beginning and been able to do something about that, I think it would have been a lot easier.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just one more quick thing I thought of right now that also helped me is knowing your failures. I know first-time moms can't really rely on this one, but second-time moms certainly can. I know that I have flat nipples, so I got one of those little Medela shields, and I know that they're not super recommended if you don't need it, and I definitely would not use it unless it's your last resort. But it was my last resort, and we're still exclusively breastfeeding at almost a year, and I really thank that little thing for that. In my special case, though,
ladies, did you happen to go to a support group while you were pregnant?
I didn't, and you recommended to me that I should, and I should have listened to you.
Do you think it would have been helpful?
Yes, absolutely.
How come?
Just seeing everybody breastfeed, seeing everybody feel comfortable doing it, watching technique. I felt very awkward holding my daughter. I felt like I was doing it wrong. Just physically, I thought I had it wrong, and I didn't have it wrong, and it would have been helpful to see that.
I should have. I went to your class when Mila, as soon as I was able to walk, I went. And I wish I would have gone before, but I didn't.
Keegan, how about you? Did you go to a support group while you were pregnant?
To see people nursing? No, I didn't. And I wish I did. It makes total sense. No one brought it up to me, It's these things seem so obvious afterwards. But I think especially in our country where breastfeeding is not, you mentioned this when you were interviewing her and Ina May, that we cover ourselves, or we do it in hiding, or we don't do it in public at all. So you don't see women nursing. It seems ludicrous to me now that I am a nursing woman.
Right.
But it's one of those things. It's like you're brought into the fold once you have a baby, and this whole new world is open to you that was completely out of the picture before you had children. So no, I'm sad about that, but no.
You can share it with your friends. It's an idea.
Yeah. Like it or not, they're going to see it.
So INMA recommends spending at least those first 10 days or longer without visitors so that you and your baby can become in sync with one another. What do you think about this advice?
I completely agree with it. However, there's also the other side of it is visitors can definitely be more of a problem in the beginning because they distract you from bonding and all of that. However, support is different because, like I said, I was healing. My husband's a full-time student and works, and I have a two-year-old. A two-year-old then. So it was crucial for me to have help so I could just be in sync with the baby. If without that, I don't know how I would have survived.
But that's a really good point.
I feel like there has to be a balance. Sometimes moms have to know that they will need help in the beginning, especially if you have other small children and if you're healing. However, it also has to be number one priority to just sit and nurse and just enjoy your baby, really. Just that tiny little newborn head smell is, yeah, it's great.
Could bottle it up and sell it. It smells so good.
Totally good.
How about you, Christina?
I think that's great. My house wasn't a revolving door by any means, but it was more than I could handle. My daughter was born a few days before Christmas, and I got sucked into the whole family coming over and all the expectations around a major holiday, and I should have just ignored Christmas for the year and called it done, because it would have been really helpful to just have that downtime without the gifts and the shopping and making sure this person has this and the card is signed and it's over with this person. And, you know, it was really hectic and I didn't need that.
Well, when I was in school getting my naturopathic degree, there was a lot of emphasis on the concept of a fourth trimester. Mm. And so I had learned about that in my studies and had my friends who were also naturopaths and had had children before me had really talked about how true that really was, that first 12 weeks. So I went into both of my births with a total plan around what this fourth trimester was going to be like. And I was militant about not having people in my home and visiting. And it's a memory that I really cherish because it was just me and my husband figuring out how to take care of a baby. And I'm sure it was ridiculous. I'm glad there weren't people to see it. But
no judgment, right?
Because neither of us had any experience with kids before we had one. But I'm really glad that we did that because it was like this little, it was like a cocoon. It was this really special experience that I got to have. And it's nice. Your home is just quiet and soft and full of warm, furry things. And you just get to nuzzle for a few weeks. And it was great.
Absolutely. But I'm very appreciative that you mentioned, Val, just how important it's finding that balance of what you're comfortable with, too. And so I like to say as well, like, don't be the martyr. If someone comes over and they want to bring you dinner and they want to do your laundry, let them do it because that means more time for you and your baby to sit there and nuzzle on one another. So, right.
And I think it's different. It's not like, it sounds like, Val, in your case, it wasn't that people were coming over and wanting to hold your baby and take that bonding time away. They were taking care of the rest of your life, which is different.
Huge.
And with my second, that was definitely the case. I mean, I stayed in my bedroom, but there were people coming in and out all day long to bring over food or just drop it outside the front door or whatever. So that was definitely happening. I just wasn't seeing it, which was bliss.
So what tips would you share with pregnant friends now for getting breastfeeding off to a great start, kind of based on your experience as well as kind of picking from some of the philosophies that Ina may share today?
Well, I had two very different birth experiences. So I will say that one of my recommendations is what Ina May says. If you can have a natural birth and get the support team in place to support you and having that happen, a natural birth, so no medications, I do think that that makes a difference. I mean, for me, it was the difference between
you know, I had a C-section with my first and a natural unmedicated birth with my second. And that second birth, the baby went right on my chest. He was on my chest when they cut the umbilical cord. He stayed on my chest until I put him in the car seat to leave the hospital. And I think that that really set things up in a much better way than with my first, where we were separated for a very long time, almost 24 hours. He ended up, I mean, he was a good nurser, so it ended up being okay. But, you know, I have this guilt about that first 24 hours and what didn't he get from me and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think if, you know, getting that support team in place to support what you want to have happen, to help the chances of it happening, is really helpful, because it causes a positive chain reaction that has an impact on breastfeeding.
Going off on what she said, which is also what I've told, you know, my best friend recently had a baby and she had him naturally. And the minute we found out she was pregnant, I was like, you know, find out where you want to have your baby and just try to not do it at a hospital. Because, I mean, not that I have anything against hospitals, but I had two C-sections. And with the second one, I waited and waited, and finally we had to do it again. But I went into it saying to the doctors and nurses, in, you know, a crazy mama lion way, you know, as soon as you can give her to me, please give her to me. I want to nurse her. I probably said that 30 times. And I have this awesome picture of me nursing her when I was still kind of woozy, and, you know, an hour after she was born.
Oh, which amazing.
For a C-section is really soon. And yeah. That was so awesome. Yeah. To be in the recovery room still with my little hat on, nursing her. And that is probably my biggest advice, is no matter how you birth, hopefully it's in a peaceful, unmedicated way, but if you don't, still fight to have that baby with you as soon as you can, because a positive chain of events will likely follow.
Yeah, being your own advocate and being proactive.
You have to be. Yes, yeah. Have to be. Definitely. Especially at a hospital.
Yeah. How about you, Christina?
You know, those things as well for me, but additionally, it really resonated that she said to learn manual expression. Mm. That would have been really helpful for me before the baby's born. And also what she said about the loss of birth weight. I knew to expect a loss of birth weight, but I had a Medicaid delivery. I had some complications. I was induced for medical reasons, and I didn't realize how much of that would add weight to her that she would then lose. And so the pediatricians were coming in very concerned about her loss of weight, and really, in retrospect, it wasn't a considerable amount. And if I would have known a little bit more about what the medication was going to do, I think that would have helped me a lot.
Yeah, that's a great point. And the manual expression, there's a wonderful website out there with a video. If you Google Stanford University hand expression or manual expression, there's about a 5-minute video on there by Dr. Jane Morton, and she shows you how to do it. And I actually recommend for all moms to watch, but especially moms who know that they're going to need a cesarean birth for whatever medical reasons, just to know how to do that, because it helps bring in your supply faster. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've done studies on it. Mm-hmm. So thank you for mentioning that as well. Well, ladies, thank you so much for your advice and insight into getting breastfeeding off to a great start. Again, it was an absolute pleasure to interview Ina May, and I personally thank her for her time and her insight into preparing for breastfeeding. Before we wrap things up, here's Lara Adello talking about ways to overcome societal booby traps.
Hi, Boob Group listeners. I'm Lara Adello, a certified lactation educator, the retail marketing manager at Best for Babes, and owner of Mama Pear Designs. I'm here to answer some of your most common questions about how you can achieve your personal breastfeeding goals without being undermined by cultural and institutional booby traps, such as, why should the newborn bath wait? Babies can make a pretty messy entrance into the world, but some gentle toweling off, ideally on the mom's chest, can go a long way to removing the goop. What the evidence strongly suggests, however, is that dealing with it by whisking a baby away to its first bath is dangerous in several ways. It negatively affects baby's body temperature and can be harmful to breastfeeding too. Why? Because a baby's instinct is to crawl to the breast, and she or he is driven by the sense of smell. In The Impact of Birthing Practices on Breastfeeding, Linda Smith explains, The senses of smell and touch are especially powerful triggers of infant and maternal behavior. The newborn sense of smell is especially acute in the first hours, triggering breast-seeking behaviors and movements. Washing or bathing the mother or baby removes olfactory cues that support breastfeeding and attachment, and thus should be avoided. We can see this behavior in the breast call. The instinctual movements of the newborn toward the breast in the first hour or so after birth. And research has shown a marked difference in breast crawl behaviors between babies who were bathed and babies who weren't. The sense of smell, and particularly the smell of amniotic fluid on the baby and a similar smell at the mother's breast, appears to be one factor unlocking the sequence of this instinctive behavior. This is also borne out by the fact that when a baby's hands are washed, she or he is less likely to do the instinctual hand-to-mouth movements typically seen in the first hour after birth. For these reasons, the California Department of Public Health, to name one of many health authorities, recommends in its model hospital toolkit, babies are usually most ready to breastfeed during the first hour after birth. And for the normal newborn, this should occur prior to such interventions, such as the newborn bath, glucose sticks, footprinting, and eye treatments. During the first day of life, skin-to-skin time and breastfeeding should take priority over every other routine event, such as infant bathing, pictures, and visitors. But not all moms feel that they have this option. Unfortunately, some moms are still pressured to have their babies bathed early on. If you're concerned that your baby might be bathed in the first hour, or that it might interrupt your skin-to-skin experience on your first day, you can specify your wishes in your birth plan and discuss this with your providers. A special thank you to Tanya Lieberman, IBCLC, for writing the Booby Trap series for Best for Babes. Visit www.bestforbabes.org for more great information about how to meet your personal breastfeeding goals. And my website, www.mamapairdesigns.com, for breastfeeding supportive wearables. And be sure to listen to the Boob Group for fantastic conversations about breastfeeding and breastfeeding support.
Thank you to all of our listeners. If you don't already have Ina May's book, you can purchase them through the online store on our website. If you have any questions for one of our experts, we'd love to hear it. Call the Boob Group hotline at 619-866-4775. Leave us a message and we'll answer your question on an upcoming episode. Thanks for listening to the Boob Group, because mothers know breast.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating health care problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified health care provider.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.